Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Krisus Daf Yud Dalid. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur will begin from the very top line of Daf Yud Dalid. Before we learn the actual Gemara, let us just recap what we learned in the very end of our previous shiur. We had learned the relevant Mishnah to this section of Gemara, and that was at the bottom of Yud Gimel Amud Beis. The Mishnah had mentioned this concept of multiple offenses for one act, in this case, an act of eating. The Mishnah said, Yesh oichel achilo achas v'chayov v'moleo arba chatois v'oshem echot. And it went off to mention the case of Tomei Shochal Chelev Oyenoisim and Mugdoshim Yom Kippurim. And Rabbi Meir added to that that if it was Shabbos and he carried it out while eating from a private domain to a public domain, which is a Shabbos offense, that would add an additional chatos. This concept of an item that is forbidden and multiple offenses could be attached to it is known as the concept of Iser Chal Al Iser. Before going further, just a general note, and that is that the Mishnah that we just read quickly, we had mentioned it, we had discussed this Mishnah in our previous shiur, and the upcoming Mishnah, which will appear in our Gemara, discusses multiple offenses. The next Mishnah one may see already at the bottom of Yud Dalet Amud Aleph, where the Mishnah makes reference to intimacy with one individual and their resulting multiple offenses for that act. This Gemara, namely the Gemara that we're opening up with now, very shortly, and the next Mishnah, both open up with the theme concerning Shitas Rabbi Meir and the idea of Iser Chal Al Iser. We are of the impression that in general, Rebbe Meir disavows Iser Chal Al Iser. Namely, once something is forbidden, we can't attach to it additional offenses. And yet, in these Mishnayos, we see that once you had something that is forbidden, subsequent or additional prohibitions can be attached to it, and it's our job to understand how this operates. So, bear in mind that the opening discussion and the discussion that follows on the Gemara that continues to the top of Amud Beis are almost identical in their structure, but we are dealing with, of course, different prohibited items, as you will shortly see. So now our Gemara begins. Well, we should actually read our nosei, our topic heading that appears in the outside margin, just to give a flavor of what we'll be discussing. Under our nosei, which is a topic heading, and in our Gemara markings, the Shas Ozer, which is the Gemara that appears on your screen, we offer topic headings and structural notes when needed. In this case, our topic heading reads, Afalpi debederech klal, even though in general, Ein Iser Chal Al Iser, according to Rebbe Meir, we might as well add, Iser, we will say that Isur Yahol Al Iser, a subsequent prohibition will set upon a previously forbidden item under two circumstances. One is called Be'Iser Kolel, and Be'Iz Be'Iser Moisif. To appreciate how these things operate, we will go on in the Gemara and see under what circumstances we apply this concept of Iser Kolel and Iser Moisif. So now, our Gemara. Nemo Islei L'Rebbe Meir Iser Chal Al Iser. Should we say that Rebbe Meir, as he was reflected in the Mishnah at the bottom of Yud Gimel Amud Beis, where there was the consumption, the eating of a forbidden item, and even though the item was of a basic prohibited nature, we saw multiple offenses attached to it. This would indicate that once something is forbidden, it can become even more forbidden, if you will, additional isurim, which we call isur chal isur. So should we say that Rabbi Meir subscribes to that possibility? The Gemara says, not necessarily. Nihi the isur chal al isur lesle. Granted that in general, a subsequent isur cannot take hold of something that was previously forbidden. Isser kolel, isser moisif islay. Now, very shortly we'll see these concepts applied, but before we do that, let us look at the Rashi at the top. Nehid isser greido chal al isser leslay, a basic or simple subsequent prohibition cannot be attached to an initially prohibited item. Kegon ha'ochel nevelas behemot tameah. Eino chayav mishum nevela. Let us say someone were to consume a dead horse meat, a horse that died. A dead animal is called a nevela. Unkosher-ride animals are called tamea. So if you have something that before it died was already forbidden as a behema tamea, a horse, a pig, and other animals of that nature that lack the signs of kashrus, those are called behema tameas. When they drop dead, so Rashi adds, eino chayov mishum nevela. The person who consumes that won't be guilty of the violation of eating nevela. Tahainu iser greida. That's second iser, namely nevela is a, we'll call it a stripped down model offense, negative command. There is no additional factors in the Isser of Nevela that weren't already there when you were dealing with the Isser, the prohibition of Temea. From this you can see that when there are additional characteristics to the subsequent prohibition, then we can say that even though you are dealing with an item that's already prohibited, since the subsequent prohibition has characteristics that didn't exist in the previous prohibition, the subsequent prohibition can be attached. And if you're dealing with someone that has done the violation knowingly, so he'll be subjected to multiple punishments. And if you're dealing with the realm of a korban chatos, those kind of offenses that if done unwittingly would result in his needing to bring a sin offering, so he'll have to bring additional sin offerings. So as we saw in the Gemara, that even though in general we don't say that an iser, something that's prohibited, can attach itself to something that was already forbidden, in two general areas when you're dealing with an iser kolel or an iser mosif, it can. So now the Gemara explains. Tohor me'ikora lo osur elo b'chelev. A person who is ritually pure. And going back to the examples of the Mishnah, we dealt with someone that ate chelev from a sacrifice that was left over, and he did this on Yom Kippur. So if you were dealing with a person that was initially tohor, and he looked at these items, for example, he looked at mukdashim, sacrificial meat, or he looked at something that was not left over, he would not have any problems with it. So someone who initially was tohor, as far as the list of isurim are concerned here, he's usur only with regard to chelev. Havei le tomei. Once the person becomes tameh, we're dealing, of course, with chelev of a korban. That should be noted. Chelev from a sacrifice. Once the person becomes tameh, so a tameh person is also forbidden to eat chelev. That goes without saying. That doesn't matter whether he's tor or tameh. So as far as his being tameh and the chelev, that in and of itself wouldn't be an additional problem. However, Migu dinesar bechatichos tahoros, since at the time he comes tomei, other pieces of acceptable sacrificial meat that he would have been able to eat now become forbidden. so that this new status of being tame has an effect on something that that didn't exist before he became tame, and that is on other tohor pieces. So isvasef bei nami isura ilui chelev. So this tame status will have an effect also with regard to the chelev. So even though the chelev was already usur, even though the man was tohor, his becoming tome has an effect on outside pieces, and since it takes effect on outside pieces, on other pieces of acceptable sacrificial meat, it will also manifest itself with regard to the chelev. This process that we just described is called an iser kolel. Kolel means it includes the chelev status. Has an effect, it's kolel, it includes outside pieces, something outside. The tome status didn't have a direct effect on the chelev because the chelev was already forbidden, but it did have an effect on outside pieces, and that is what we call an iser kolel. Rashi on the fourth line from the top says, Mishum tuma. He now has an iser with regard to the chelev, called an iser tuma, v'hainu kolel, delo isvasif isura achetza. It's not as if the new iser is added to the chelev itself. The chelev was already forbidden. Elo agavra isvasif isura legabi achrini. The iser, the prohibition, as a result of his being tome, has an effect on this man with regard to other pieces. And therefore, kail nami lahai bisura. It includes the chelev also. Continuing on in the Gemara, the chelev meikara lo asur elo bachila. With regard to the piece of chelev itself, its original iser was one of eating. In other words, if you had a piece of chelev from a non-sanctified animal, so that piece of chelev would have been forbidden to eat, but one could have used it for other things. He could have used it for dog food. He could have used it, if it's fatty, he could have used it as a type of grease or a grease for taking out screeching noises from rusty hinges, as long as he doesn't eat it. So chelev initially was not forbidden except with regard to eating. Akdeshe, once at the point that the animal was sanctified, so migu de isvasev bei isura dehano, now this very same piece of chelev gains an additional layer of prohibition in that it becomes forbidden to derive personal benefit at the point that it's sanctified. So, isvasef beinami legabi chelev. Let us say this again. With regard to hektish, when you sanctify the animal, the other parts of the animal become usur in terms of deriving benefit from it because it's now sanctified. So this additional layer of Isur Hanoh settles upon the Chelev as well. The Rashi says on this, Isur Hanoh, Hainu Moisif. This he calls an Isur Moisif. How is that? The Isvasif Isura Achetza. On this very item itself, a new layer, a new level of prohibition sets in. And that's the Isur Hanoh. So this is not viewed as an Isur Kolel, but rather an Isur Moisif. Because here the new Isur settles upon the item itself. The Akati, but still, the Hedyot hu Osir, Avol Gavoa Shari. When you're dealing with sacrificial meat and it's Chelev, it might be prohibited to the individual, to the private person, but it's something that you could put on the altar for to offer to the Almighty. Havilei nosar, once it is left over beyond the appropriate time, it becomes labeled as nosar. And we say, migu disvasif be isura legabi gavoa, since the new iser sets in with regard to the chelev and is being offered to the Almighty, isvasif be legabi hedyot. This is manifest also with regard to the private individual. So the Iser Nosar, which is a new layer of prohibition on the item itself, this is called, as Rashi says, an Iser Moisif. Chal ole Yom HaKippurim, when the holiday of Yom Kippur sets in, Migu Disvasef Be Iser Legabi Chulin, since he now cannot eat other pieces, other food, other items, because it's Yom Kippur, it's a day of fasting, this Isser sets upon the man, not directly on the food. The food was already forbidden, but this man now cannot eat other pieces of food. Isvasef bei legabi gavoa. The Isser of Yom Kippur sets upon this sacrificial meat as well, and particularly the chelev in this case. This is an example of an Isser kolel. So with this analysis, you can see how we've accounted for multiple offenses being attached to something that was originally forbidden, namely the chelev was originally forbidden, but because of the new aspects of each one of these Isurim, they can attach to the Chelev. At this point in the Gemara, you'll notice a few markings. First of all, we have a Roman numeral 1, and a number of lines later, more than halfway down, a Roman numeral number 2 that you see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. This reflects that there will be two versions of the Gemara. And that's under our Mivneh heading. In the outside margin, you can see we featured these Roman numerals 1 and 2, and we've indicated Shnei Lishonos, two versions of the Gemara. A double underline that appears, you can see one here, it says Hei Chatos, and later it says Vinisni Sheish Chatos. These are suggestions. Vinisni, we've written in our comment in the structural note, Vinisni Hei or Vav Chatos, Hatsos, these are suggestions, b'shnei halashonas, in the two versions of the Gemara, lahoisif oyud chiyuv chatos, to add another chatos violation, or another chatos obligation because of an additional sin. In other words, our Mishnah mentioned four chatos and a korban osham. Our Mishnah said, v'chayovim oleo arbo'o chatos. This suggestion will be, why not add a fifth example? Let us just take note of the second Lashon, is Rav Ado Bar Acha. He teaches that the Mishnah has five chatos in it. That's his version of the Mishnah. And according to that version, the Gemara will suggest, well, why not add a sixth example of a chatos obligation? In addition to this, we also have triangles. These are we call this a navigating marking in this context. The triangle point facing up represents, well, we should say in general, the triangles, as you can see, are going to flip-flop, sometimes point, sometimes down, in an alternating fashion. This is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the logical flow. With the point facing up, they represent she'elos, questions. Lama loy moisifin oid chatos, why not add an additional chatos? With the triangle flipping over, tshuvos, they represent responses. We'll be using a dashed underline to highlight the main answers or responses as we go along. So one of the responses we will see is bevehemachas. Another, the subsequent response will be that our Mishnah is talking about be'aver echad, one limb, and finally be'kezayas echad. Our Mishnah is interested in multiple offenses that could be accomplished by eating one olive quantity. So we now turn to the Gemara with the first question. V'nitzni chameish chatois, v'nukmo kegoin de'ochal kezayas pigol. Why not set up the Mishnah as a person eating something, and he'll be in violation of five sin offerings. In other words, he'll need to bring five sin offerings in the event that he did this one eating in a state of lack of awareness. And what's the fifth chatos? What are we adding? Another kezayas, a second kezayas, which would be responsible for his violation of pigol. Pigol is a case of a sacrifice that it was offered with an incorrect mindset. Example, someone slaughters the animal with the intent of eating the meat beyond the accepted, legislated time frame. So why not speak about someone eating, in this case it would be two kizasim, and the additional kizayas will make him be responsible for his violation of pigol. The Gemara answers, "Bechado behemo komairi, b'shte behemos lo komairi, v'noisor pigul bechado behemo lo mishkachas lo." B'chado behemo kamairi means our mission is talking about one animal and not talking about two animals. And to have nosar and pigol in one animal is impossible. If we look at the Rashi, b'shtei behemos lo mairi, v'noisar pigol b'chado behemo leko, the pigol eino elo b'dalet avodas shaltan. Pigol is achieved only if one has this incorrect mindset while he is dealing with the sacrificial blood. Hilkoch mida paglo lo chazia lo achilas odem lo chias mizbeach. Once the kohen, the officiating kohen, has a pigol machshava, it can no longer be fit. It renders it unfit for the mizbeach, for the altar. Hilkoch lo chayel ole nosar. Therefore, the isir of nosar, which the Mishnah made reference to, cannot ever come to be. And therefore, since the Mishnah does speak about nosar, we know that the Isser Pigol could not have taken place. The Gemara asks Alom Olo, and here you can see the triangle repositions itself, point facing up, reinstating the question, why not Aloma loy mishkachas law? Why not have both in one animal? Kagon shelo aver pigol legavi mizbeach. The person had sacrificed, had slaughtered, and sprinkled the blood of the sacrifice with the pigol intent, this incorrect mindset. He brought the limb onto the altar. De poka pigule mine. If one brings a pigol limb onto the mizbeach, the bringing of it on the mizbeach voids or removes the pigol prohibition, and as long as he doesn't put it in the fire, v'havilei nosar uchadama ula, and in accordance with ula's teaching, koymitz pigol shela legabi mizbech. If a person took a handful of a pigol meal offering onto the altar, poka pigulo mimenu v'havilei nosar, the pigol prohibition is canceled. But it, by not being offered in the fire on time, it then does become nosar. So imagine you have something like that. In other words, you have this, you have one animal that the rest of the animal that wasn't brought on the mizbeach, the rest of it, the rest of the meat is in fact pigol, and the limb that was brought onto the mizbeach can become nosar. So he eats two olive quantities, one of that which was brought onto the mizbeach, which will carry with it the nosar prohibition, and the rest of the animal that was not brought onto the mizbeach will carry with it the pigol violation. So the Gemara answers, Be'aver echod komairi. Our Mishnah is interested in focusing on someone eating from one limb, and b'shnei evorim lo komairi. But two limbs is not the topic of our Mishnah. Komairi means it's speaking. Our Mishnah is not speaking about two limbs. The nosar pigol b'chad ever lo mishkachas law, and to have the nosar and pigol violation in one limb, that you can't have. In other words, as we just illustrated before, once you bring the limb onto the mizbeach, so the pigol violation is canceled, and then you would once again be able to, you would be speaking only about nosar. The Gemara asks back, Aloma lo mishkachas law, why is it that you say you can't have pigol and nosar in one limb? Kigon she'elo aver pigol legavi mizbeach. A person had processed according with the pigol mindset, brought the limb onto the mizbeach. De palge an chalgabi mizbeach, u palge me'avroi de mizbeach. Part of the limb, one limb can have a leg, for example, it's a long limb. Part of it is on the mizbeach proper, and the other half is not yet on the mizbeach. Dehahu de mizbeach poka pigol, the part that's on the mizbeach, so the pigol is voided. The havilei nosar, that part can become nosar, the leaving over beyond its accepted time. Uchud Omar Ula Koymetz Pigul Shelo Agabi Mizbeach Poka Pigul Mimenu Vavali Nosar. And as Ula taught, and we saw this before, a handful of a meal offering that was processed with a pigul intention that was brought on the mizbeach loses the pigul status and can become nosar. So why are you resisting adding a fifth chatos and call it for the pigul violation? So the Gemara answers, Omale loy. This idea of part of the limb on the mizbeach and part of limb off, we can't go with that. I rubo de mizbeach, shadio le mizbeach. If the majority of the limb is on the mizbeach surface, then it's considered completely on the mizbeach. Rubo de broy, rove, the majority, broy, outside, unless off the top, not on the top yet, shadio le broy. Then the limb is considered not on the mizbeach. Well, the Gemara says, if you're so sure about that, then why does Rami Bar Chama ever raise the issue of Rove Evorim as a question? And if Rami Bar Chama does raise it as a question, apparently it's not so simple to say that you can't have this limb partial on, partial off, and in fact split it. Tifsho de boy Rami Bar Chama. So if you're so sure with that if Rove is on, so it's considered completely on, or if Rove is off, it's considered completely off, then why not conclude Rami Bar Chama's question, which was Holchu Beivorim Acha Rove Lo? Do we follow the majority when it comes to limbs, or maybe we don't base things on a majority? Now, if Rami Bar Chama is raising that as a question, you can't say so assuredly that if Rove is on, it so the majority is on, and likewise the opposite. So why is it then that we can't speak about a fifth offense, calling it pigul, and the person ate two olive quantities of meat, one of them carrying with it the four offenses mentioned in the Mishnah, then the second olive quantity carrying with the pigul offense, so that in one act of eating, he'll be in violation of five chatos offenses, and not just four. Elo, the Gemara answers, b'kezayas echod komairi, b'shnei zeisim lo komairi. Our Mishnah is interested in focusing on the consumption of one olive quantity worth of sacrificial meat, and not two. And in order to get to the pigul offense, we would have to have spoken about a second olive quantity. The Gemara asks, Voloi, are you so sure that the Mishnah is avoiding something above one olive quantity? V'hokotoni yoyim hakipurim, ubayom hakipurim koyseves hu demechayeve koyseves islei shnei zeisim. The Mishnah mentions as an additional offense, as one of the violations, one of the four chatos violations, is the fact that he ate it on Yom Kippur, the day that's forbidden in eating. And a Yom Kippur eating violation is accomplished only if one consumes a date quantity. Koseves is a date quantity worth of food substance. And a date quantity contains two olive quantities. So to suggest that b'kezayas echod komairi, that is not so. Omar Rebbe Zera. Rebbe Zera says, as far as the Yom Kippur violation is concerned, and the koseves quantity is kegoin she'ochal kulyo b'chalbo. He ate the kulyo is a kidney together with the chelev. The point is that we need to see the multiple offenses in the chelev itself, and in order to complete the Yom Kippur quantity of koseves, so he's eating it along with the kulyo, that's the organ that's attached to the chelev in question. Rashi, a couple lines up from here, says, "Kegon shochal kulya b'chalba, v'im nafshich loymer l'chayev hakulya mishum pigul v'chalba mishum noisar." And if you were to think that he should be chayev for the kulya because as a result of pigul, and the chelev because of noisar, and yes, include another sin offering, lo motzi l'mei marhochi, that you cannot say. The tome she'ochal kotoni. The Mishnah spoke about a tome that ate the bechelev atzmo boyelukmi lekuli suri. The spirit of this Mishnah indicates that we want to establish all of the violations with regard to the chelev itself, and that and not rely on the kulya for a new violation. So in saying that, we are establishing that the chaylev is responsible for all of the violations, including the Yom Kippur violation. However, in order to complete the quantity needed for Yom Kippur, so we're saying that in addition to the chaylev, he's eating the kulya that's attached to it as well. Rav Papa Omar, this is a, you can see we have a little two over here. Why is it that pigul is not mentioned? Kagon demalya betamri. Rashi says, Rav Papa Omar, lohochi lo tona pigul, delo mairi b'shnei zeisei chelev. Our Mishnah is not speaking about two olive quantities of chelev. And you'll ask, well, what about the Yom Kippur problem of quantity, needing a date amount? He ate one kezias of chelev, and in addition to that, he also ate, along with it, some actual dates to complete the shiur necessary for the Yom Kippur violation. But dates are not going to bring him to a new pigul violation. It just completes the quantity needed for the violation of Yom Kippur, which was based on your basic chaylev that he was eating. As we said earlier, we have a Roman numeral number 2, a second version of this discussion, but shorter though. Rav Ado bar Acha Masni He Chatos. Rav Acha, in his version of the Mishnayos, lists 5 Chatos. Umetaritz lo kigon de ochal kezayas pigol. And he explains how you have an additional pigul violation is that he you have an additional a fifth chatos is because he ate kezias of pigul. Rashi says umetaritz lo kigon de ochal kezias pigul mi behemo acheres bahado. One behemo was done without any pigul machshava, and a second animal was done with pigul machshava. Velo mishani kehani shinuya deka mishaninon, the Gemara says, and according to Rav Ado, we don't answer all of the answers that we were giving before. In other words, he doesn't hesitate to set up the Mishnah of one eating that has in it 5 offenses, and in order to get to that, you'll have to speak about 2 animals being involved. So now the Gemara asks, if that's his approach to the Mishnah of Venisni Shesh Chatos, you could have added a sixth example of a Chatos violation, the need to bring a sixth sin offering, Venukma Kegoin de Ochal Nami Kezayas Dam, and set this up as his eating a third olive quantity, and that third olive quantity was blood. So you have your basic nosar together with the other 3 violations mentioned in the Mishnah. That's 4 chatos violations. A fifth chatos violation because he ate a kezias from a second animal that was done with a pigul mindset. And now the suggestion is, why not add a third chatos violation, a sixth chatos violation, by his consuming a third olive quantity, which is blood. So the Gemara answers, "Bechado achilo komairi, b'shtei achilois lo komairi." V'shiaru chachomim dein beis hamliyo machzik yoser mishnei zeisim. Our Mishnah, according to Rav Ado's thinking, is interested in one act of eating, one swallowing, if you will, that could result in the maximum number of sin offerings that one could be in violation of with one swallowing. And it's established that a person's throat in one act of swallowing cannot hold more than 2 olive quantities in one shot. So since ein beis hablio machzik, the beis hablio is the throat of the swallowing mechanism in the throat, doesn't hold more than 2 olive quantities, this suggestion of a sixth chatos violation is rejected, because in order to get to this sixth chatos, violation, we would have to add a third olive quantity of substance, and the throat doesn't hold that much in one act of swallowing. Rabbi Meir Omer. Rabbi Meir, in our Mishnah, mentioned that there should be an additional chatos if he had eaten this chelev on Shabbos, on Yom Kippur, that coincides with Shabbos, so that because of Shabbos he would be in violation of carrying out from one domain to another. That's called hoitzo'a. So that if he had the chelev in his mouth on this Shabbos Yom Kippur and then walked outside with it, he would, as we said, be in violation of both of an additional sin offering for a Shabbos violation. So now the Gemara asks, V'nisni, why not teach in the Mishnah im hotzio chayov? Simply, if we were already talking about Yom Kippur, so just teach if it was, as you said, Yom Kippur, he would be chayev. My time of kotoni im hoisa Shabbos. Why does he have to add Shabbos into the equation? Is there not an iser hotzah, a prohibition of changing the location of an item, changing its domain on Yom Kippur itself? Before going further in the Gemara, let us glance at the Nosei Mivneh heading that we offer on the outside margin. Here, we feature Roman numerals 1 and 2. They'll appear to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. These are Shnei Lishonos, two versions, Shebohema Gemara Menaseh Limtso Hamokher Shemimenu Rafra Masik Esdino. We will be looking, trying to find a source from which Raphram derives his point, She'eruv l'hoitzah l'Shabbos v'ein eruv l'hoitzah l'Yom Kippur, that the dinim that we associate with, we call carrying on Shabbos, carrying or transferring the location of an item from one domain to another, from a private to a public, or from a public to a private domain, this is called the realm of hoitzah. Eruv has to do with setting up a mechanism that allows the carrying from one type of area to another without getting into details. So this realm of Eruv v'hotzah, according to Raphram, doesn't apply to Yom Kippur. The Gemara. Omar Raphram, in response to the question of why the Mishnah, in order to talk about an additional Isser of Hotzah, had to introduce Shabbos, Raphram says, Zoyser Meres, this goes to show, Eruv Hotzah l'Shabbos v'ein Eruv Hotzah l'Yom HaKippurim, the laws regarding Eruv and Hotzah, which we refer to in general as the prohibition of transferring location of items, applies to Shabbos and doesn't apply to Yom Kippur. The Gemara asks, Mimai, how do you know that? Dilmo yesh eruv v'hoitzah l'Yom HaKippurim. Maybe there are hoitzah restrictions with regard to Yom Kippur as well. V'hachi kotoni. And thusly, the Mishnah is teaching, im hoitzah Shabbos, v'hoitzio chayav af mishum Shabbos v'yom HaKippurim. Maybe the Mishnah is trying to say that if it were Shabbos, he would be chayav for hoitzah in addition to Yom Kippur, also for Shabbos. So from the language of the Mishnah itself, we don't see necessarily that which Raphram teaches. Elo I itmar de Raphram al hodo itmar. If Raphram ever said his point, it must have been based on the following. Desanya. We have a Tanaic source which describes the sending away of one of the two goats brought on Yom Kippur. One of the two goats were, without getting into all of the Yom Kippur background, suffice it to say that lots were drawn to determine the status of two goats that were brought into the Azora of the Beis HaMikdash, and one of them was sent away, sent out of the Beis HaMikdash to a cliff and pushed off in order to atone, carry with it the sins of Israel. This was called the Soir Lazazel. And it says in this Tanaic source that you see in a frame, quoting the Pasuk, Vishilach Biyad Ish Iti, and it shall be sent, that's the goat, shall be sent with a designated man, and we looking at these words, ish lahachshir es hazar, the word ish comes to tell us that even a non-Kohen can participate in this journey of carry of accompanying this animal out of the Beis HaMikdash to the cliff. Iti, that word, afilu betumah v'afilu b'shabbos, tells us that it can be done even if the even if there is tumah and even if it happens to be on Shabbos. Iti means also b'mezumon, appointed. Katani, we see in this source, iti afilu b'shabbos, that the carrying out of this goat can take place even on Shabbos. What is the point of the pasuk including Shabbos, even to say even on Shabbos? Amar Raphram, Raphram says, from here you see, Zosomeris, Eruv v'hoitzah l'Shabbos, v'in Eruv v'hoitzah l'Yom HaKippurim. That if not for it being a coinciding of Shabbos with Yom Kippur, that I wouldn't need a special allowance, because Yom Kippur itself doesn't contain with it a carrying prohibition. So that the fact that the pasuk says et and tells me even on Shabbos, since it's Shabbos, I now have what otherwise would have been forbidden, namely carrying out of this goat on from the Beis HaMikdash to outside. But since the pasuk makes an allowance for it, therefore I can do it even on Shabbos. The Gemara rejects Raphram's conclusion and says, "Mimai, shiny sor hamishtalech dehechshero biyom haKippurim bekach." The reason that I don't need a special Yom Kippur reference to making an allowance for it is because that is what one is expected to do on Yom Kippur anyway. Since it's Yom Kippur and since it's a Yom Kippur ceremony, so this is how you do it on Yom Kippur. I don't need the pasuk to make an allowance for something that is expected to be done at the outset. Therefore, only because of it's Shabbos and this isn't a Shabbos activity, so I need to be told that you can do this carrying out of the Sawyer even if it happens to be Yom Kippur that coincides with Shabbos. Elo deRaphram badusahi. Rather, that which Raphram says is, well, sometimes translated badus as a joke. For our purposes, we could say it's Raphram's comment of that there's Erev and Otzah l'Shabbos and not for, with regard to Yom Kippur, is something that has no basis. The Mishnah. Yesh bo bioachas v'chayav ole sheish chataos. We can imagine a situation where one act of forbidden intimacy takes place and he'll be in violation of six sin offerings. In other words, he'll be obligated to bring six sin offerings if he consummates this act of intimacy while he's in a state of unawareness. Kegoin habo al bito. Someone has relations with someone who happens to be his daughter. Now, this one woman, his daughter, can contain in her six offenses. And the Mishnah enumerates, one who has relations with Bito Chayav Oleo Mishum Bito Vachoisoi. Bito is daughter, Achoso sister, Eshes Achiv, wife of brother, the Eshes Achi Aviv, wife of father's brother, the Ashes Ish, a married woman, Venida, a menstruant woman. The Gemara now continues at the top of Amud Beis. The Gemara asks, well, how could this Mishnah be taught as it is? V'hal les lay the Rebbe Meir Yisr Chal al Yisr. Is it not so? Is it not so that Rebbe Meir is of the opinion that a subsequent Yisr cannot be attached to something that's already forbidden? So that if a man had a daughter, whatever she does later on with regard to different marital statuses that she enters, that won't have any effect on the fact that she's already forbidden as a daughter. So how can this Mishnah speak about him being chayav for multiple offenses with an act of intimacy with his daughter? The Gemara answers, Nehi de Isir Chalal Isir Lesle, granted that he, Rabbi Meir, doesn't hold from a basic Isir Chalal Isir, and we illustrated that at the beginning of today's shir with the case of the horse that dropped dead. The horse was already forbidden as a behemoth tameah. The fact that it wasn't slaughtered and it now appears to be a nevela, that does not manifest itself with regard to the horse meat, which was already forbidden as unacceptable animal. The fact that it's now a nevela doesn't create an additional offense. That's Ein Isur Chalal Isur. So the Gemara is saying, granted, Nehi de Isur Chalal Isur Leslie, granted that Rabbi Meir does not agree to additional prohibitions being attached to things that are originally forbidden. Nevertheless, Isur Moisif ve Isur Koilel Islay. When the subsequent status has an additional aspect to it, whether it be through Isur Moisif or Isur Kolel, then the subsequent prohibition can become attached. In order to facilitate understanding of this Gemara, we have an accompanying chart, so that if it's necessary, either print out the chart along with the Dapim of Gemara, which we always recommend at the beginning of every shiur, or if you don't have that option, so you'll have to scroll ahead to see the chart that has been provided accompanying this Gemara. So we now go through what on first glance looks like a very complicated chart. The chart that's entitled here Habo al Bito. There's a first level here of one who has relations with his mother, and that's what the Gemara begins with. And you'll notice on the chart, the top chart describes this situation. Kagon Shabo al Imoi. A man has relations with his mother, so that on the chart you see a ben, it's in a diamond, and he has there's an arrow pointing up to aim his mother, so he has relations with his mother, v'hoilid bas, and that union produces a daughter. De iser bito v'achoisoi v'hadi hadodi osi. With this son having relations with his mother, the birth of this girl, in fact, what is she to what we call Ben, to the son? What is she? She is a daughter, because she is an offspring of this Ben, but she's also a sister by virtue of the fact that the Ben and the Bas have the same mother. So that these two offenses, with regard to any act of intimacy between Ben and Bas, these first two acts, and notice we have little numbers 1 and 2, this is explained on the chart, beneath the chart, 1 is the offense of Bito, and 2 is the offense of Achoso. So those two offenses set in at the same time, namely upon her birth, she is labeled as daughter and sister simultaneously. So when you have two prohibitions setting in simultaneously, they both take hold. The story goes on. Niseis le'ochiv, when this woman we labeled as Bas marries his Ben's brother, that is illustrated by the little dashed arrow and a number 3 on the chart. So what happens at that point? Couldn't we say she's already forbidden anyway to Ben with the labels of Bito and Achoso? So we're going to point out now that with her marriage, with Bas's marriage to one of his brothers, Migu de Isvasif Isur Legabi Achin, the other brothers, and there are, you can see them on the chart, other brothers that this man may have, that Ben may have, now become forbidden to her by virtue of the Isser known as Eishes Ach. So Isvasif Isura Legabi Didei, this new Isser can take hold on Ben as well. And that's number three, that's the Isser of Eishes Ach, namely wife of one's brother, sometimes called sister-in-law. Niseis La'achi Oviv, and as the story goes on, if afterwards this Bas marries Ben's father's brother, that's called Eishes Achi Achiv. Migud Isvasif Legabi Sha'ar Achi Oviv. She becomes forbidden to other brothers of his father. Isvasif Legabi Didei. This Isser sets upon him as well. There's a Girsa change that the Shita Mekubetzes brings here in Ois Gimel, and which would read Migu Disvasif Isur Legabi Shar Bnei Achei Aviv. This Isser will set in regarding other children of father's brothers. Isvasif Nami Isur Legabi. It'll Legabi Didei. So just like other sons of father's brothers become forbidden as this number four, which is called Eishes Achi Aviv, this is the wife of one's father's brother, so it sets upon our Ben character as well. Havilei Eishes Ish, being that she is a married woman, we have this listed on our chart as number five. If this Bas simply marries an outside man, that makes her into an Eishes Ish, a married woman. Migu disvasif isur legabi almo. As a married woman, she now becomes forbidden to all other men outside. So isvasif nami legabi didei. It takes hold on our Ben character as well. You can see that these are a lot of examples here of an Iser Kolel, where other people who previously were not forbidden now become forbidden. So since these other people become forbidden, the Ben also becomes forbidden. Havilei Nida, if she experiences her female monthly cycle, known as Nida, Migu Disvasif Iser Legabi Bala, this new status will manifest itself with regard to her husband, Isvasif Nami Legabi Didei. It will have a manifestation regarding the Ben as well. So, as we have demonstrated in this last discussion, even though one may hold Ein Iser Chalal Iser, but the subsequent prohibitions that were featured in our Mishnah, each one of the subsequent prohibitions manifests, has a manifestation with regard to other people. Since that is the case, it manifests itself with regard to the central figure, the Ben himself, as well. We continue with the next Mishnah, which is a Mishnah really in the same spirit of that which we have just learned. And we also have a chart that accompanies this Mishnah. Habo al Bas Bito, one who has relations, intimacy with his daughter's daughter. So it's a grandfather with a granddaughter. Chayov Olel Mishum, and there's a list of offenses. The Mishnah will list off seven offenses initially. And how you get to this, we have the chart to assist in seeing how that operates. The Mishnah says if one has intimacy with Bas Bito, he could be in violation of Mishum Bas Bito, the Kaloso. Kaloso is daughter-in-law. The Eishes Achiv, brother's wife. The Eishes Achi Oviv, father's brother's wife. The Achois Ishto, sister of one's wife. The Eishes Ish, a married woman. Venida,
the menstruant woman. Rabbi Yossi Yomer, im ovar zokein vinosa. We see zokein on the chart. Zokein, for our purposes, would be the father of the focused Odom on our chart. We remember we have the grandfather having relations with his granddaughter, so Zokein would be the father of this grandfather. So if Ovar Zokein Venosa, Chayav Oleo Mishum Eishes Av. So that if, when the Odom on our chart has relations with his granddaughter, he'd be in effect in violation of an eighth offense, namely Eishes Av, one's father's wife. V'chein habo al bas ishto, a similar situation could be designed with all of these violations in the case of someone who has relations with the bas ishto, the daughter of one's wife, the al bas bita, or with one's granddaughter, namely daughter from one's daughter. Katani. It's said in our list of offenses, Chayav Oleo Mishum Eishes Av. We have a little arrow to the immediate right, left-hand side of the Gemara text, which enables you to find where this is from. You would back up just two lines and you see where this came from. Using our chart, we are focusing on the diamond figures, Adam, and the Bas Bitoi. So, we're asking here, how in the world could the Bas Bito ever become the wife of Odom's father, of Zokein? In order for Odom on our chart to be in violation, in order for the grandfather to be in violation of Eishes Av, so the girl's great-grandfather would have had to been able to marry together. Well, how could that be? Mi Sharyo Lei, is she allowed to him? Rashi elaborates on what the problem is. If we look at the Rashi, it says, Mi Sharya Lei, Le'oviv Shel Zeh. Is she allowed to, Oviv Shel Zeh would be our person we labeled Zokein. V'ho Eishes Ochiv He. The girl is Eishes Ochiv. As Rashi says, Almo Asira Leila Oviv Mishum Eishes Ach. If we already established that she was forbidden based on Eishes Achi Oviv, so it's in effect she's already forbidden to the Zokein because she is married to his brother. So she would be forbidden to the Zokein, what's through the prohibition known as Eishes Ach, the Ein Lo Ishus Ba, there wouldn't be any Ishus, any marital connection between Zokein and this Bas Bito. V'amai Kom Rabbi Yossi Chayav Oleo Mishum Eishes Av. If that be the case, so why would our Odom, our grandfather, be forbidden to the Bas Bito as a result of being Eishes Av, meaning Zokein's wife? How could she ever become Zokein's wife, being that she was Zokein's brother's wife, and as such, she is forbidden to Zokein as wife of brother? So the Gemara answers. We come back to the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kegoin Shenofla Lo Liibum. Zokain's brother, on our chart as Ach Zokain, had in fact been married to her, as was indicated by the dashed arrow number 4. He died, Ach Zokain died, leaving no children. That creates a bond known as Yibum, and Zokain married her, Beheter, through Yibum. This is a Torah mitzvah to marry one's brother when he dies, leaving no children.
The Gemara asks, Ihachi, if that's the explanation, my Ovar. You'll notice there's a line with a star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. We have one opposite this line and a few lines up. The first word aligned there in the Mishnah, you'll notice, was dashed, underlined, Ovar. What does it mean, Ovar, Zokin Venosa, that Zokin violated and was in violation by marrying her? If you say that Zokin's bond with her, with Bas Bito, is through Yibum, so there's no violation. The Gemara answers, Omar Rabbi Yankiv, She'ovar Mishum Kalas Benoi Shnia. Well, you see that this Bas Bito was the Adam's daughter-in-law. Adam's son, you can see where there's an arrow number 2 on the chart. Bas Bito had married the grandfather's son. So, or in simpler terms, the girl married her uncle. That relationship, as far as Adam is concerned, creates Kalas Beno, one's son's daughter-in-law, which is a Shnia. Shnia is a rabbinic prohibition. Kedesanya, the following Tanaic source illustrates this. Kaloso equals Erva. One's own daughter-in-law is a Torah prohibition, a forbidden relationship, an Erva. Kalas Benoi, one's son's daughter-in-law equals Shnia, is a second degree or a rabbinic prohibition. V'chein ata motze, bebas benoi, ubebas ben benoi, ad soif kol hadoros. And similarly, you find with the daughter of one's son, and bas ben beno would be the daughter of one's grandson, until all the end of generations. The Gemara asks a question that we've seen already a number of times, and that in asking on Rabbi Meir, here we ask regarding Rabbi Yossi. Umi is lei le Rabbi Yossi iser chal al iser. You'll notice that we have a long question marking the kuf that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line, which brings into question how could Rabbi Yossi, who we saw in our Mishnah as participating in these additional offenses, how can he participate in this when he himself holds that we don't say a second offense gets attached to that which was already forbidden? So that is the basis of this question, which as we mentioned, is accompanied by the long question marking. The kuf you see encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line. Umi islei l'Rabbi Yossi iser chal al iser. Does Rabbi Yossi hold that a subsequent prohibition can be attached to a previous one? V'hotnan, we have the following Tanaic source, which will indicate that Rabbi Yossi does not hold from Iser Chal al Iser. The source says, Ovar Avero Shiesh Bo Shtei Misois. A person violated an offense that carries with it two death penalties. And of course, you can't kill a person twice. What do you do? How do you decide which penalty to give him? So the example, before we get into any further detail, involves someone who had relations with a woman who was both his mother-in-law and she happened to be a married woman. Mother-in-law carries with it a penalty, a death penalty of srefa, literally burning. The married woman penalty is chenek, is strangulation. So if a person had relations with his mother-in-law who was also a married woman, the first opinion says, Nidoin b'chamura, that he will suffer the more serious death penalty. And in this case, Sreifa is more serious than Chenek. So he's being judged for the mother-in-law status of this woman. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Nidoin b'ziko rishoino sheboa olav. Rabbi Yossi says that the man who has intimacy with this forbidden woman is judged based upon her first status with regard to this man, and not with regard to her second or latter status, because ein iser chal al iser, a second offense or prohibition does not attach itself to an earlier one. V'tanya, ketzad omer Rav Yosi nidon bezika rishona. What is an example of this? How do you illustrate this concept of first relationship? So the Gemara explains. Chamoisoi v'nasis eishes ish. Let us say a man married the daughter of a widow woman. So a widow, she as such is not forbidden to this man. However, in choosing to marry her daughter, the woman becomes his mother-in-law. So his first zika, his first association with her, was as mother-in-law. Subsequent to his marriage to the daughter, she, the mother-in-law, marries a man, v'nasis eishes ish. Nidoin mishum chamoso, the son-in-law that has relations with this woman, with the mother-in-law, will be guilty of the chamoso violation, and he'll be guilty of srefa. Eishes ish v'nasis chamoso, if, however, you have a woman that was a married woman who also happened to have a daughter. So, before getting involved with the daughter, this woman happens to be a married lady. So the man's association with this married woman is we'll call the future son-in-law's association with the married woman is an eishes ish prohibition. When he decides later to marry her daughter, that is a second level of prohibition known as mother-in-law. However, the first step, the first relationship, the first prohibition that was established was already one of a married woman. So, eishes ish v'nasis chamoso nidon mishum eishes ish. Rabbi Yossi will say that the man, the violator, will be guilty of the lesser penalty, but that's because it's zika rishona. So we see that Rabbi Yossi does not hold from iser chal al iser. So then how is it in our Mishnah that Rabbi Yossi mentions that an eighth prohibition can be attached to the previous seven prohibitions, indicating that Rabbi Yossi does hold from Isser Chalal Isser? So the Gemara answer is very similar to the way we answered before in the previous discussions on this topic with regard to Rabbi Meir. Amar Rabbi Avo, Moide Rabbi Yossi, the Isser Moisif. Rabbi Yossi will concede that when it comes to an Isser Moisif, that a second level of Isser, a second Isser, a subsequent Isser, can be attached. V'chein kioso rovin, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amodi Rabbi Yossi, be'Isser Moisif. Rabbi Yossi will concede that when you're dealing with a subsequent prohibition that is called Isser Moisif, that can be attached. My Isser Moisif Iko Hacha, what is the Isser Moisif that we have over here? Answer, Deika bra l'saba. The Saba has a son. And regarding the son of the Saba, the woman that Saba married is called Eishes Av. And we say, Migu de Isvasef Isura Lagabi Bray. Now on the chart, we'd have to note that the person in question, the Adam in question, has a brother. So that brother is a brother who is a with regard to the Zokain, that Ach that you see on the chart next to the diamond in Adam, the woman that Zokain marries is called Eishes Av. So since Eishes Av has relevance to the brother of Adam on our chart, that's what we're saying over here, is that Migu Disvasif Isur Legabi Brei, since the Isur of Eishes Av has relevance with regard to Adam's brother, Isvasif Isur Legabi Didei, that Isur, that prohibition, has relevance or is attached to Adam as well. So that in addition to all of the previous Isurim that we mentioned, we also have the Isur of Eishes Av as far as Rabbi Yossi is concerned. So that's an example of an Isur Moisif, and under such circumstances we do say Isur Chal Al Isur. Mishnah. Habo Al Chamoisoi, one who has intimacy with his mother-in-law. And this Mishnah, as the previous Mishnahs, are examples of multiple offenses that can be violated or are violated with one act of intimacy. So if one has relations with his mother-in-law, he could be in violation of Chayav Aleha Mishum Chamoisai VeKalosai, it's mother-in-law, and Kalosu is daughter-in-law, VeEshes Ochiv, VeEshes Achi Oviv, Eshes Ochiv is wife of one's brother, wife of one's father's brother, VeAchois Ishtoi, one's wife's sister, VeEshes Ish, a married woman, VeNida, and the Nida woman. VeChein HaBo Al Eim Chomiv, VeAl Eim Chamos, and likewise, this kind of multiple violation could be constructed with regard to one having relations with the mother of one's father-in-law and mother of one's mother-in-law. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Omer Habo al Chamoisai, one who has relations with his mother-in-law, Chayav Aleha Mishum Chamoisai V'Eim Chamoso V'Eim Chomiv, that with that one woman there could be a possibility of three mother-in-law type violations. That means basic mother-in-law, mother of mother-in-law, and mother of father-in-law. Omrulo, the Rabbonin who argue with Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, say, Shloshtan Shem Echad Heim. They are all under the same banner, the same title, namely they're all derivatives of mother-in-law, of the mother-in-law prohibition, hence they carry with them only one offense. As we go on in the Gemara, we notice a new marking. We have a diamond that's featured, and under the Nosei Mivneh heading that accompanies this, you'll notice the in the outside margin we have a topic heading together with a structural note, and a diamond is featured. We will feature here Machlokes Im Loimar de Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri v'Sumchus Omru Devor Echad. Will we be able to say that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and Sumchus are of the same mindset, the same thought, the same opinion? Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Habo al Chamoso, Shigam Eim Chamoso V'Eim Chomiv. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, we already saw what his opinion was. And Sumchus will talk about the case of Oisoi V'Espanoi. Totally different realm of Halacha. However, we'll see the common point very shortly. Hashochet Eim V'Esbasbeno, a person slaughtered an animal, and the animal's grandchild, the daughter of the daughter. The prohibition we should mention of Oso Vespino is a Torah prohibition of slaughtering a mother and offspring on the same day. In this case, we open up with two slaughterings where there is no violation because the slaughtering is only first and second generation. Here he did a first and third generation, but then the Achakach es Bito, then he slaughtered the middle generation. And with regard to that, so it's one act, and the issue is, will it carry with it a multiple violation, a double Oisoi Vespino violation, by slaughtering after first and third generation, the slaughtering of the middle generation carries with it a violation of one and two, and also two and three, because they are also a difference of just one generation. So now let us see the Gemara. Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Hashaya, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri v'Sumchus Amru Dover Echad. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Hod Amoran. Well, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri already stated his position. Sumchus Maihi. What is the case of Sumchus? Disnan. So we have a Tanaic source. And before we go on, actually, we should point out that we have a Roman numeral number 1 in the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. And that's that's aligned with Rabbi Elazar, who claims that these two Tanoim, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and Sumchus, are of the same mindset. We will see on the third line from the top, Rava, and opposite that line, you have a Roman numeral number 2, which is a different approach. Rava, and later on the third wide line, Rabbi Nachman bar Yitzchak, they represent two Aleph and Beis. They represent an opposing approach to that of Rabbi Elazar, where these Tanoim, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and Sumchus, do not say one in the same. But in the meantime, we have to deal with Shitas Rabbi Elazar. that aligns these two schools of thought. So, having stated Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri, we now ask, Sunchus Maihi, what is Sunchus? Disnan, and now we're at the very top line of Tes Vav Amud Aleph. We have a Tanaic source, Shachta, a man slaughtered a cow, or an animal, kosher variety animal, the Esbas Bita, and its grandchild. When we mentioned, by the way, kosher variety animal, we're speaking about kosher variety domesticated animal, as is the case with sheep, goats, and cows. So he slaughtered the an animal and its third generation, as Bas Bita, its granddaughter, the Achakach Shochat Es Bita, and then slaughtered the middle generation. Sofeg Es Arboyim. Sofeg Es Arboyim is an expression referring to a set of lashes. He gets 40 lashes. Sumchus Omer Mishum Rabbi Meir Sofeg Shmoinim. Sumchus says that for the one act of slaughtering the middle generation, he gets two sets of lashings, because that middle generation that was slaughtered on the same day as first and third generation is in fact a violation of mother and daughter, and daughter and mother, namely 1-2 and 2-3. Omar Rava. Oh, and what's the point before going on? Sumchus, you see that in one act of slaughtering, he's in violation of two offenses. Similarly, we saw with regard to Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri, with regards to the one act of intimacy with this woman, she represented, it's quite possible that she represented both his mother-in-law, because he had married her daughter, and he may very well have married the, she might be at the same time, because of another marriage where he married, let us say, the daughter of his wife's sister, which would be make this woman the mother of his mother-in-law, and she might also be, because of an additional marriage, she might be the mother of his father-in-law, where a man married the daughter of a particular person and then had relations with his father-in-law's mother. So that at that point, after several marriages that this man had, he then has intimacy with a particular woman. She carries with her three titles: mother-in-law, mother of mother-in-law, and mother of father-in-law. So Rava says, Dilma, Omar Rava, Dilma Lohi. Maybe there is no parallel between Sumchus and Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri. Now, Rava looks at things from one standpoint. He analyzes from the Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri standpoint, and Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok will do the same exercise, but look at things through the Sumchus standpoint. So the Gemara goes on and says, Dilma Lohi. Rava says maybe the parallel is not so. Ad kan lo koma Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri. Maybe it is so that Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri said what he did, where one is chayav in violation of each different forbidden act in one shot. Hacha ela mishum shemos muchlokin. There are three different titles. Demikri achamosa, she is referred to as his mother-in-law. Umikri eim chamosa, she's also the mother of his mother-in-law. Umikri eim chamiv, and she's also the mother of his father-in-law. So you have three different titles. Therefore, the three different shemos that creates three separate offenses. Avogabi oisoi v'es benoi, but with regard to the offense of slaughtering mother and offspring on the same day, dekulu oisoi v'es beno mikrin v'ein shemus muchlokin loi. They're all called a violation of oisoi v'es beno. There aren't separate titles here. And therefore, so even though it looked at on the surface as if there were two violations, but they all have the same title. Therefore, there isn't multiplication of offenses, and hence there wouldn't be 40. There wouldn't be 80 malchus. And Omar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok, Dilma ad kan lo kmar sumchus elo gabi oisev es beno. It could be as far as Sumchus is concerned, where he says there are multiple offenses in the case of the slaughtering. That is because the gufen muchlokin, there were separate animals that had to be slaughtered in order to achieve this violation. Aval hocha, in the case of the forbidden relations that we described with the mother-in-law, the ein gufen muchlokin, we're talking about one act of intimacy that is accomplished with one woman. So Ema Krabi Avo Amar Rabbi Yochanan Svirale, it could be that Sumchus will accept Rabbi Avo Amar Rabbi Yochanan's analysis of that mother-in-law scenario, which says Yomar Rabbi Avo Amar Rabbi Yochanan Sharahein Ozimohi. And from that pasuk, we learn Hakosav Asan Lekulan Zimo Achas. The Torah views all of them, all of these three different titles, as one act, as one offense. Let us glance at the Rashi on the fourth line from the top. Degufin Muchlokin. In the case of the animal slaughterings, we had separate bodies, Shemachmas Rishona Ushnia, because of the slaughtering of the first and second animal, which was the third generation. Because of the first and third generation slaughterings, Bo Elu Shnei Isurim Al Hashlishis, the two offenses were able to take part or figure in the slaughtering of the third animal, which was the middle generation, so that you needed to have slaughtered two separate animals in order to say that the slaughtering of the third animal, namely the middle generation, was an offense. That's called gufin muchlokin. Two separate animals were needed. Avol hacha ein gufin muchlokin. Here, with regard to the intimacy, it's not called gufin muchlokin, because it's the single act of intimacy that brings about the violation. And I don't believe that in and of itself is enough. You really have to couple that with the Gzeres HaKosuf of Rabbi Avo and Rabbi Yochanan, which Rashi goes on to explain. Dilmo ki Rabbi Avo Avol hocha afagavda al yedei bita ubas bino nesra hazaken olav gimel isurim. Even though the three isurim really did need or needed his marriage with the woman's daughter and two other granddaughters, the ein gufin muchlokin ba zimo achas the eino chayav al isha ubita ubas bino bavio achas kemas nisin elo achas v'hainu chamoiso v'eim chamoiso v'eim chomiv. By virtue of the fact that you have this pasuk that lumps them all together into one type offense, therefore he is in violation only of one offense. And that's as far as how Sumchus would view the case of the mother-in-law scenario. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.